1 Kings chapter 7. Well, we've got here the description of Solomon building his own house and also the temple. Well, he built his own house for 13 years, verse 1, and yet he spent 7 years building God's house, we read in chapter 6, at the end of chapter 6. So, his own house was clearly of more significance to him than God's house. This is right at the beginning of his reign. And if you look at the dimensions of the two buildings, you will see that his house was far more grandiose than God's house. Inevitably, I suppose you think of Haggai, who talks about when the exiles returned and how they built their own houses, their own paneled houses, while the house of God laid waste. And there's a very powerful exhortation straight away. What's more important for us, God's house or our house? Be it our own ownership of property, development of property, or house in the sense of a family, etc. What's more important, our family or God's family? What's more important, any of these things? You know, is it God's or ours? When you put this together with Ecclesiastes 2, you get a slightly wider picture, where Solomon, as I see it, is looking back at his life at that point and saying, yeah, I was really into building. I was really into it. I built all sorts of things. I was into gardens and fancy gardens and all that sort of thing. And he says, yeah, I went through all that, and yet I didn't find any great personal truth at the end of it, but I went through it because I did whatever my eyes lusted after. So his building of the temple is in that context of his fascination with building projects. And yet he did the desire of his eyes, but it still didn't satisfy him. And you then have to reassess in the light of that his building of the temple. Was this his zeal for God, or was it what he actually was wanting to do in the pursuit of his own interest in building projects? Well, I think, therefore, that we have to assume that because Solomon did turn away from God, his wives turned away his heart, I think we have to assume that his motives were not the best in all this building. And you've got to translate that into our lives. I mean, somebody can, for example, love entertaining, putting on big meals and so forth, and, well, they like to think, oh, this is how I serve God, by having people back from church and entertaining them. And maybe that is how they serve God. But the danger is that you can do it because that's what you want to do anyway. Young people may like travelling and like to think, oh, yeah, I'm not just travelling just to see the world. I'm a zealous missionary for the gospel. Our motives are very easily clouded, are they not? And his building of the temple, I think, was a case in point that he really was very into building projects. And in the end, as he says in Ecclesiastes, it was all for himself because it was what he wanted to do. Well, when you then look at this house of the forest of Lebanon, it was covered with cedar over the 45 beams, verse 3, and there were pillars, etc. Well, there was an area of 100 by 50 cubits with a roof of cedar. This would have required about 5,000 square cubits of cedar wood. That's if it were a flat roof, and even more if the roof was angled, which it may well have been. No wonder it was called the House of the Forest of Lebanon, because there would have had to have been a whole forest of cedar trees cut down in Lebanon to provide that amount of cedar. And it would have all had to be felled and transported to Jerusalem for that building work. This is just obsessive. This is opulence. And this is not at all what God looks for. In Isaiah 2, God condemns Judah for their pride. And there's a passage there that's got a lot of allusions to Solomon. They are full of silver and gold, neither is there any end of their treasures, full of horses and chariots. Well, you know, he had 40,000 stalls for horses, we read in chapter 4. this absolute obsession, full of idols, the work of their own hands, and full of the cedars of Lebanon. So I think that Solomon is being alluded to there, and Judah, in their materialism and their apostasy, are being compared to him. This was all absolute opulence to have that amount of cedar to deforest Lebanon, cut down a whole forest of major mature cedar trees to build what came to be known as the House of the Forest of Lebanon. That Forest of Lebanon was kind of transferred to Judah, to Jerusalem. And then he makes these pillars in verse 18, and there were two rows around on the one network, etc. The Septuagint reads pomegranates for pillars. And, of course, Egypt was famous for pomegranates. Remember, the people reflected that, oh, it was great back in Egypt, there were pomegranates. Pomegranates and Egypt went together in their mind. When you look at Egyptian architecture of the time, pomegranates are a major theme. Likewise, verse 19, the capitals that were on top of the pillars in the porch would have carved lilies. And the capitals of Egyptian pillars are all in the form of the lotus. So he's clearly copying the motifs of Egyptian architecture. Don't forget, he had married the girl from Egypt. And he is influenced clearly by Egypt, by the world. And yet, this is all absolute opulence. And God had said very clearly to David at the start of this whole idea, I don't want this. I don't live in temples made with hands. I actually prefer to live beneath curtains, referring to the curtains of the tabernacle. That's what he wanted, and to be on the move, not to have all this opulence. And of course, I will build you a house. I don't want all this. And he did all this on the back of slave labor. I mean, the number of people he had out there cutting down trees and bringing straw and provender for his horses, his 40,000 chariot horses, and hewing stones in the mountains, etc., transporting them here, there, and everywhere. That's why when he dies, the people come to his son Rehoboam and say, your father whipped us. And Rehoboam agrees, yes, my father did, and I'm going to whip you harder. So he abused people because he was just so carried away with this opulence. And I think that there is a warning for us here. Opulence is a sin. It really is. And I think that Solomon is set up as the parade example of that. And he reckoned that his opulence was somehow serving God, but it wasn't at all. It was serving himself, as he admits in Ecclesiastes when he looks back on his life. We may consider that I am not an opulent person, but if you compare our lives with that of our forefathers, we are living in opulence. It is quite socially okay to enthuse about that pasta or that whatever high quality expensive food that was imported from Italy and this or that or the other. Oh yes, we are living opulent lives. And all that has got a price tag attached to it. You don't need to live like that. Live modestly. I realize the poor man pays twice sometimes. I'm not advocating asceticism, but live modestly. Because it is the spirit of our age to, for example, spend huge amounts of money eating out at expensive restaurants. You got a bit of spare money, you go and have a great grand meal somewhere. Go up to town or wherever it is and blow it. And that is okay. And it's okay within most churches, amongst most believers. Oh, well done. You went there. Oh, yeah, you went to that restaurant. Oh, yeah, you went there. Oh, yeah, I like to go there next time. I got a bit of money or whatever. To show off that, I've got this real cool watch, I've got this real cool phone, this cool car, this, that, or the other. This is opulence. Live modestly. Look at the Lord Jesus. He was a poor man. he really was. And you look at so many of God's servants, they did not live an opulent lifestyle, even if they were wealthy, and quite a number of them did have wealth behind them. But we ought to live modestly. And this needs to be emphasized more and more. People are giving their whole lives to work, 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 to get wealth. What for? To basically fund the opulent life. Well, you don't think it's opulent, but it is. I can tell you, you can exist in this world on very small amounts of money if you live modestly. Now, certainly no eating out, no restaurants, no none of that. You can survive on surprisingly little. And give your heart to the things of God, not to making money to fund this opulent lifestyle that you're hooked on. You don't have to eat, you know, Italian imported pizzas or whatever it might be. You don't need that. You don't have to have all that. Even though our church environment probably usually teaches us that that's quite okay and actually that's a good thing to do and well done, you did well for yourself. Sure, that's what people tell you. That's the subliminal message from everybody that you're doing well for yourself. Yeah, well done. Yeah, good. I'm glad you enjoyed yourself. You owe it to yourself. You don't owe it to yourself because nothing that we have is ours anyway. It is not ours. You may say, but I worked for it. All the same, it is the gift of God. And these are resources in our hands to use, not to enjoy ourselves with. And what does it give you anyway? This is the wonder of that book of Ecclesiastes, where here's a man who did what most people would not achieve in a lifetime in just even one aspect. You know, people spend their whole lives to get their house just perfect and to get a holiday house and get that just perfect and to have this extension on their property and that kitchen and that study and that lounge and all the rest of it. And then, your life's over. It's game over. Solomon did all that. He was totally obsessed with his building projects and he said, I didn't find anything there. Saying that some people spend their lives endlessly chasing relationships. They get married. Oh, no, I met someone better. Oh, off I go with them. Oh, then someone else. Oh, then someone else. Oh, that one, she was nutty. Or he was crazy. He was a psycho. She was a gold digger or whatever. Oh, whoops. Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, let's end that one and go to the next one. Solomon did all that 1,000 times. And what did he find? And what does anyone find with all this? Nothing. It is really the illusion of opulence. And yet, once you give in to the whole idea that I can legitimately ingratiate my senses, the sight of my eyes and my taste buds and so forth, that is all okay. Well, you will start on that path. And people wonder why they haven't got resources, why they haven't got time, why their life is over and they can't do this, they can't do that. It's nothing worse than getting to the end of your life and you look back, as folks tell me they do, pretty much almost from their grave planks and think, I could have done all this another way. Don't get there. You don't need to get there. Make the change now. Opulence is a sin, and that's the lesson of Solomon.